Welcome to Leafs Lunch. Al's brother with you. Julia, still day to day, so being joined by my good pal Dave Feschuk from the Toronto Star. Dave, how's it going?
What's up, Al's brother? Let me congratulate you. You picked a winner last night. Good job, my man.
Oh, thank you very much. We were picking nothing but winners yesterday, and I've actually been picking a lot of winners. Do you do that Tim Hortons app where you pick the goal scorers every single day?
This is a craze. I know a lot of guys that are like addicted to this thing.
So I do it when I remember, and I actually got free. I have free coffee this week. All week I get free coffee. So if you get 7 days in a row where you pick a winner, you get free coffee. So I did that, and I've actually picked. And there's a couple of days in between a couple of weeks ago where I forgot, so the streak was broken. But I've picked 14 straight days that I've played. I've picked correctly. So I'm not only on a heater on my hockey challenge picks with the Tim's app, but also back in the saddle and winning games in the football sort of thing. So
wow.
Oh,
good
yeah.
to hear.
Oh yeah.
I was a little worried about the chemistry on Team Al Dog there.
Yeah,
it was looking a little grim there.
It was waning. I can tell you it was definitely waning, but I think last night's win put us back on track, and Hayes, he should be shaking in his boots. Because we're hot.
No
doubt. We're hot right now. Toronto Maple Leafs also absolutely hot right now. We'll be joined by TSN Hockey Insider Chris Johnson for his weekly hit in just a couple of minutes. Sarah Orleski, our Winnipeg Jets reporter, will join us also at the bottom of the hour. And the Maple Leafs en route to Minnesota. They'll be heading out there today after practice for one night, night one of the back-to-back, and then head north to Winnipeg Sunday for night two. But Minnesota, I mean, you talk about a team on fire. So are they. They've been unbelievable. This is going to be a battle of the Titans.
Yeah, this Minnesota Wild team is rolling in a big way. What have they won? Six of their last seven. I mean, they are absolutely... Sorry, it's five in a row, right? It's five in a row.
Yeah.
They're looking at the wrong thing there. And then they can do a lot of things. Like, they can score. And when you look at that team, Kaprizov, obviously the featured guy with that Hartman line. But they're doing it. They got one of the worst power plays in the NHL, Al's brother, and they're still scoring at a rate that's up there in the top handful of the league. So, yeah, this is not a team you take lightly as you head to the prairie for the rare prairie back-to-back.
Yeah, so it's going to be a bit of a toughie. And quick note here, Peter Mrazek was sent down to the Marlies on a conditioning stint today. He'll play one of their games on the weekend. And it's looking like Wall and Hutchinson are at practice. So Wall back at practice, which is a good sign. He didn't practice the other day, left with stiffness. And he was day-to-day, much like our friend Julia Teixeira, who remains day-to-day on this show. But Joseph Wall... maybe gets in, maybe he doesn't. Who do you think ends up playing on Sunday? Perhaps Saturday, but most likely Sunday in Winnipeg.
Well, look, it's a no-brainer. I mean, if Wall is able to play, you're playing Wall. I mean, Michael Hutchinson, we all know him, we all like him. He's a great guy, but his record's well established as to what he is. He's essentially a borderline NHLer. He's probably a 2B or a 3 on your depth chart on a good team. And Joseph Wall, I mean, this is like, how do you argue with what he's done? How do you argue with perfection out of the gate in his young NHL career? So you're going to go with Joseph Wall if you have the chance to go with Joseph Wall, and I don't think it's a debate internally at all.
Well, my question to you is, though, like, with the way that this team is buying in defensively right now as a five-man unit, though, I mean, we should have confidence in whoever is starting in goal. We didn't have that much confidence in Joe Wall when he started the past couple of games, and then he was winning and got a shutout in New York and then played exceptionally well in California as well. And it's based on the team just buying in and helping out. And even if it is Michael Hutchinson, if Wall isn't good to go, I mean, should we still be confident in whoever's in net if the team keeps playing the way that they are?
Look, there's no doubt they've bought in defensively. They're a different team than we've seen in this era, Al's brother. But look, let's not minimize what Jack Campbell's done here. Like, he's stepped up and made big saves in big moments, and he's done it repeatedly. He's done it consistently. Look, does Michael Hutchinson have that in him on one night? Yeah, he could do it on one night. But you look, his record career-wise, and we've got many years to look at through Michael Hutchinson's performance in both the AHL and the NHL, it suggests he's not going to do it for you on the regular basis. Joseph Wall is the most tantalizing thing in sports, which is the unknown, the great potential, the glistening new thing that has come out of the gate flying. So, yeah, you're going to go with it. But Al's brother, like, I mean, as much as I agree with you on the defensive front, they're giving up a lot of chances. Like, you know, Sheldon Keefe was on Overdrive last night talking about how they're giving up a little more shot volume than he'd like.
We have that clip, actually. Chris, if you want to play that clip, we can hear it right from the horse's mouth. Sheldon Keefe yesterday on how Campbell has made this team maybe look a little bit better than they really have been.
Goalies are the ultimate difference maker there. And, you know, like I was saying, we've played far from perfect hockey. We've played good hockey, but we've played far from perfect hockey. And our goaltending has been exceptional, which has made us look near perfect at times. And that's, you know, those guys are part of our team as well and clearly huge parts of our team. But certainly, you know, they've done a really good job of instilling confidence in the group.
Right, so I mean,
yeah,
like,
no doubt.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just gonna say, like, I mean, look, nobody's gonna minimize a streak like this. You know, you win 15-17, you're flying, and you're blowing teams out. You're laying beatings on teams that are supposed to be really good, like the Colorado Avalanche. But look, the Colorado Avalanche showed you what happens when you get a stiff in net with Jonas Johansson the other night. That was an ugly goaltending performance by any measure. As good as the Leafs were, you know, the 8-3 ballooning of the score, was that a lot of that was on the incompetence in the crease. And so I'm looking at, like, the one stat I was looking at, AB, is during this stretch of 17 games where the Leafs have won 15, you know, they're second in the league in 5-on-5 save percentage. They're second in the league in that PDO stat, which is sort of like that luck stat.
Right.
You know, you combine the shooting percentage with your save percentage. So that tells me, look, there's going to be regression, right? They're not, like, they're really good, but nobody's this good. And a lot of that is going to be how much pressure you put on your goaltender and how often he can come out and save you, like Jack Campbell's been saving them with this stellar 9.59 save percentage.
Yeah, and it's similar to earlier in the season where the PDO was really low. Like, they weren't getting the lucky bounces, and it was going to regress the other way, and now it's kind of balancing out in the way that numbers and analytics typically do. Let's bring in Chris Johnson, our TSN Hockey Insider. Chris, how are you today, pal?
I'm doing well, guys. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's Dave Feshuk and I, our friend Julia, day-to-day, not going to be joining us for our hits. I know how much you love her and love being a part of it, but it's just going to be us for today. The Maple Leafs, they've been absolutely dominant as of late. Do you think that there's another level that they can get to, though, Chris?
For sure, big picture. You know, I agree with a lot of what Dave's saying there. It's not to nitpick, you know, between this many victories and, you know, they basically lost two games in 6 weeks. You know, it's a pretty solid streak. But, you know, I think that you're starting to see Auston Matthews come alive, for example, have some of their top players maybe, you know, hit another gear that they haven't had throughout the entirety of this winning stretch. And, you know, the league itself is going to, you know, get a little bit more challenging as the season goes along. You see that consistently. I would expect there won't be as many 8-3 type of games to be had in the future. You know, as we, you know, ramp up closer to the playoffs. So, you know, there's definitely another level for them. But, you know, it's really hard to poke too many holes in what they're doing here lately.
So let's talk a little bit of goaltending, Chris. I mean, we heard Sheldon Keefe on Overdrive last night talking about how there's no doubt that as good as Jack Campbell's been, he's played more than they would ideally have wanted him to play at this point in the season, being on pace for 60-plus starts. You know, with Peter Mrazek on the horizon of returning, how do you think they're going to approach the tandem situation between Campbell and Mrazek, assuming Mrazek ends up being healthy at some point?
Yeah, that seems like a big assumption, right? I mean, it's already been two long, or pretty long injury stretches for him and very few games played for the Leafs. You know, I think in a perfect world, if they get to a point where Mrazek is healthy and performing well enough, you know, I could see it being pretty close to 50-50 or, you know, maybe a couple more starts in Jack's favor. But, you know, I think that they really did intend to run these guys as a tandem as much for, you know, preserving the body as in the mind as you know, performance-related reasons. I'm not really clear how this start to the year is going to affect Mrazek. I know he's been someone who's been injured a lot at times in the past, so maybe this is something you can just put past him. But, you know, it's not too optimal, clearly, to basically be getting up and running in December. And you know, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, again, to see them have to manage his injury situation because he has had two groin injuries so far to start this year. So, you know, I think that in a perfect world, you're almost splitting the starts, but, you know, we might not be in a perfect world at all with the Leafs goaltending this year.
In conversation with Chris Johnson, TSN hockey insider, columnist for the Toronto Star. Earlier in the season, there was some discussion about the Leafs listening on some of their defensemen. Is that still going on? Like, I'm almost at the point where I feel like rolling with a stable of seven may be in the best interest of the Maple Leafs, but are you hearing anything? Are they still listening on potentially moving one of these defensemen?
Well, that talk certainly seems to have cooled off. You know, it was a few weeks ago the Leafs had made it known to teams that, you know, they were willing to listen on Justin Hall and Travis Dermott. Obviously didn't lead to anything that resulted in a trade. But, you know, the one thing that will come into view here, you know, once Mrazek gets through his conditioning loan and they eventually recall him to the NHL team, is that they have big cap considerations. You know, they're not going to be able to carry many extra skaters, if any at all. And so, you know, I could see them having to make a transaction between then and now, you know, when Mrazek's ready to join the NHL roster. And, you know, it could end up being one of those players because it's someone that can be moved. But, you know, I haven't heard anything specific. I don't think that it's, you know, it certainly became more of a back burner issue when Mrazek went down with his injury. But, you know, unless someone else comes up injured here, which can always happen. I mean, sometimes you say, oh, this cap trouble is looming. And then if another player gets injured, you know, they might get some temporary relief from that. But if they get to a fully healthy roster, they're going to have to, you know, probably unload a player and, you know, might end up being one of those defensemen.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic. We talked to Sheldon Keefe on the California trip about how you're sort of sitting down a guy when you've got seven defensemen. You're inevitably sitting down a guy who doesn't necessarily deserve to be sitting. Chris, you know, you saw Justin Hall, you know, take that five-game seat in the press box when Sheldon Keefe acknowledged he was hoping it wouldn't be five, but they were playing so well, he really didn't want to make a change. And we've seen Travis Dermott sitting when, you know, he doesn't necessarily do anything wrong out there. He's just the odd man out on any given night. I mean, how much do you think a GM factors that particular dynamic into his decision making on a transaction of that nature?
Well, I think especially in Hall's case, that was part of the thinking at the time, because when you know, the timing of all this was around that period where Hall was sitting, and you know, I think that if he was going to be out of the lineup for a long period of time, you know, that's someone that Kyle Dubas would want to do right by. You know, what's difficult here, of course, is very few teams play, even as long as the Leafs had, without, you know, encountering some injuries on their blue line. And, you know, Toronto's been healthy. And so, you know, I think that there's always going to be a fear of moving one of these guys and then just thinking the next game after it happens, you're going to have an injury, and then you're weakened kind of the depth and what's going for you. But certainly, you know, I think that the Leafs, you know, are mindful of not, you know, burying any players. You know, a lot's changed, you know, since the coaching change with Mike Babcock. You know, obviously we saw it a few times, with players, including Justin Hall when he was here. And I think that, you know, the approach now is trying to, you know, balance the needs of the team and depth and, but also, you know, doing the right thing, you know, cause we're talking about two guys here that have been longtime Maple Leafs or Marlies even back before that.
Let's go around the league a little bit here, Chris. So lots of news going around in the NHL. And Jeff Gorton, you know, talked today, and he said that it's probably going to take until the new year to find a new general manager for the Montreal Canadiens, but also said that they're probably not going to make a coaching change this season, going to roll with Dom Ducharme. Do you agree with that decision? I personally find it just a bit too early to make that type of declaration, considering, you know, how poorly this team has played.
Well, I mean, it's a sign to me that they're embracing the poor, embracing the suck, right? I mean, I would think that you know, this is, it's clearly a lost campaign in Montreal.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably too soon to find any silver lining in this, if you remember the Canadiens, because there's a lot of games to be played. But, you know, they're hosting the draft in July. They do have a bunch of picks. You know, there will be a natural point there if they end up, you know, drafting pretty high, where I do think that they're going to be in a good position with, you know, this thing of the season will get washed away, and you know, probably at that point in time, the coaching will have to review too. I mean, Dom Ducharme's now inherited a new boss, and he's about to get a second new boss. And so, you know, for him, he's got this period where he's got to try to pull what he can out of the team. But, you know, I don't really mind the move. I think it's also made with the idea that they'll have a fuller picture of the candidates, you know, come the off season too, of who they might be able to make a change to. And, you know, usually coaching changes primarily are made in situations midseason where you're trying to spark an immediate change in the team's fortunes. You're trying to make a run at the playoffs or, you know, bump where you're at. I mean, I think that there's a realistic view that the Canadian season is already lost in terms of what they could accomplish on the ice this year.
So, Chris, you've been on the pulse of what's going on around the planning and hope around the Beijing Olympics and NHLers ending up there. We've seen so much news in the headlines that would, you know, put a little damper on the idea that we're going to see best-on-best hockey, from the Omicron variant to the controversy around the WTA pulling out of China. What's your latest Jerry's percentage on NHL players actually facing off in China in February?
It wouldn't be above 50-50 for me. I think that, just every day in the league, right, it seems like there's one or two or three or four players getting added to COVID protocol. You know, obviously the NHL has been very reluctant to shut teams down. We've only had the Islanders and Senators have to have games rescheduled to this point in the season. But, you know, I think that there's an understanding that the cases are rising, that there is this new variant, that, you know, at this point in time, there's no mandatory booster requirement for NHL players. And I'm not convinced that's going to necessarily come into effect here in the next few weeks. And so, you know, there's enough science out there that, you know, if you're 6 months past your most recent shot, you're not as able to fend off the virus. And so I think for all those types of reasons, I think that no one wants to get too far ahead of themselves. I mean, the people running the teams and having to debate over the rosters and all those things, I mean, they're proceeding like everything's full steam ahead. But, you know, my sense behind the scenes is there's still a fair bit of trepidation that, you know, they might not be able to get through to January 10th without having more teams shut down, without having more of a disruption to the schedule. And, you know, I think it, on some level, you know, maybe as we get closer to that, there's even a debate about whether they should go. And I'm not even touching the political side of that part of the conversation, just more, you know, playing a full year this year in front of as many fans as possible is just paramount to getting the business back up and running. And so, you know, there's a fair bit of risk in going to Beijing. I mean, that the latest I've seen is that if a player were to go over there and contract COVID, that they'd have to quarantine for 3 weeks before being able to come home. And so you would be talking about taking an NHL player out of action, you know, leaving with a hotel room on the other side of the world for 3 weeks, you know, in late March late February into March, and then fly back and join the season. I mean, there's a lot to consider. And you know, I don't think until we get to January 10th we'll know for sure, because I think they're going to use every available day to evaluate where things are at and make that kind of call.
Yeah, CJ, I'm kind of, you brought that up and I wanted to bring that up with you, but it almost sounds as if some of the players are a little more skeptical on going, and that could factor into them not heading off to China. If some players just decide to say, you know what, I don't think I want to deal with this right now. Do you get that sense?
Tough to say. You know, the players took the deal to go to the Olympics, I think, against, in some ways, even what maybe the PA would have wanted. I'm not saying that they overruled the union, but, you know, they took a pretty, they're giving up a lot. Like, if they end up going, I think you basically get there, you got to surrender your cell phone, you're wearing tracking devices, you're basically locked in the village, you can go there in the arena, you can't bring your families over. As I mentioned, you're at risk potentially of having to stay there in quarantine if you get COVID, and you didn't even get any COVID insurance on their contracts. And so, you know, if that were to happen to a player, he also wouldn't be paid for the time he missed, you know, from his NHL team. And so, you know, they're making a number of personal and professional concessions in order to even try to have this work. And so I could imagine, as it's getting closer and maybe some of the reality of that is dawning on these guys that they're not going to do it. But, you know, the flip side is there's just so many players that grew up watching best on best the Olympics, right? I mean, this started in 1998, and all the best players in the league right now, more or less, were born after that date. And then so they only really knew a world as kids, you know, where you got to watch your country play in the best on best tournament and all the fervor that comes with that. And so, you know, I think ideally, you know, most of those guys really still want to go, even if it isn't the sort of the best situation to do so. But what we'll have to see. I mean, the players also have the right to withdraw themselves. You know, even if you're named a Team Canada and you don't want to go, no one's going to force someone to be there against their will. Right. So I still think that as a group, they do want to go. But, you know, they're also, you know, players generally, I'm not trying to, they compartmentalize things, right? I mean, this, they let other people worry about all these things, you know, that they're trying to prepare their bodies to play hockey. And, you know, I think that they want this experience to play for their country. I just don't know if they're going to be able to get it or not in a few weeks' time.
In conversation with Chris Johnston. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, Chris, let's get back to the Leafs for a minute here. Big weekend back-to-back here for Toronto, heading out to the Prairie. They're going to face the Minnesota Wild tomorrow and then the Winnipeg Jets on Sunday. What do you make of the Wild? I mean, they're flying right now, five straight wins. They're a high-scoring unit. They got Kirill Kaprizov in the top five in the NHL points race. What do you make of their early season success, Chris?
I'd call it a surprise. I mean, they were a surprise last year, but you sort of attach the qualifiers. You know, they're only playing in their division. Kaprizov had only played, you know, six or seven teams and you know, had a great rookie season, but you wonder how he would fare in a more normal schedule with full competition, and just doing it the second time around sometimes can be difficult. And, you know, they had a pretty tumultuous summer. I mean, it's not just the fact that there's a salary cap component to buying out Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. I mean, they were pretty big figures inside the organization. And so, you know, they didn't end up having a lot of cap space either to make additional changes. So I think that it's fair to label them a team I wouldn't have expected to be where they're at this point in the season. And, you know, I think that they're kind of an intriguing young group, even though they don't get a lot of national attention. And so, you know, for the Leafs, I see it as another game against one of the better teams in the league. And you know, they've come through a few of those lately and been on the right side of them. But, you know, it's not going to be an easy road trip playing on back-to-back nights. And, you know, the Jets haven't been going as well of late. But those will be challenging games for Toronto. And you know, I think that the Wild will be a team that can kind of frustrate them a little bit, too, with the way they play. And they, you know, they want to do a lot of the same things Toronto does in terms of controlling the puck. And so, you know, they're going to have to be at their best to get a win there on Saturday.
CJ, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch back up with you next Friday.
All right, great to pinch hit with you, Dave. We'll talk soon, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
There he goes, Chris Johnston, TSN hockey insider and columnist for the Toronto Star. The Olympic conversation is always it's going to be on the front burner for a very, very long time until we finally do get a decision. I mean, if we're going to play the Jerry's percentages game, like, where do you stand at right now?
Yeah, Al's brother, I'm getting a little depressed about it because I want to see this. I mean, I think every hockey fan cherishes.
Are you expected
the rare
to go?
Times. Yeah, I'm on a list. I'm supposed to be there. We're not getting a flight to Beijing right now. Surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly, quite difficult. We don't actually have secured flights yet. But yeah, I'm on the Toronto Star team as it sits. But everything's in flux. I mean, you know, like, and I will be going. There's no doubt about it. I know we will make every effort to be there. But whether or not the NHL guys are going to go, Al's brother, I mean, it's the every day that goes by, I'm just thinking the chances get slimmer. Because the point that CJ made there is a salient one. Like, the idea that you're going to go to Beijing, contract COVID, and then be essentially at the whim of the Chinese authorities for when you can leave the country and get on an airplane. I mean, who likes that idea?
Well, that's why I'm asking, because, like, I've heard that chatter start to kind of trickle out there that there are some real, like, you know, people are a little bit worried about that. Like, what if we do get COVID while we're there? And then with this new variant, it seems like it's you know, it's being contracted quite easily and it's spreading a lot, right? And you know, a lot spreads in these little bubbles if it makes its way in there. And the threat of that could be concerning for players. And we had Dreger on. We asked him the same thing. He was 60-40 earlier in the week that they don't go. And I think that I don't see it dipping below that from here until we actually get the decision, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I'm with Driggs on this. Like, you know, there's the health and safety side of it with the whole concern around how easy is it to get COVID, the new variant, the idea that if you're, you know, your last shot was 6 months ago or more, you're less protected. Those are all concerns. And then there's the whole political side of it, which I also think is a factor here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got the WTA at war with the Chinese as it sits. You've got a lot of pressure. You got the U.S. president saying they're going to have a diplomatic boycott. All those things, you know, when there's that much ill will toward, you know, the Chinese authorities on that side of the equation, that doesn't help the case, right? Because it just makes it more complicated. It just makes if you're running the show, if you're making these decisions, it makes your head spin. I mean, there's just too many complications when you add it all up. And we all know, AB, like, there's a priority here, and CJ put it very well. The priority is revenue, HRR, hockey-related revenue. This is a season where they got to get this business back on its feet because it's been limping badly around the pandemic, right? And that's and that has to be concern number one for everybody involved. We know it's the concern of the owners. I mean, it's the, they're the ones taking the financial hit. And we know it's the concern of the players because they're the ones that are facing this massive escrow bill. So as much as everybody wants to play and we love to see, you know, the McDavids and Matthews of the world in their national colors at center ice, I'm just less optimistic every day that goes by.
Well, and I think there was a big, you know, push that the NHL was more favorable to go into the Olympics because it's going to be in China, right? It's somewhere where they've been wanting to expand. But if it's going to be a bubbled up Olympic experience, you're not going to be able to showcase yourself to the people in China in the same way you would in a regular live event. I mean, that may not be as appetizing as it once sounded to the NHL.
Well, we just saw with the WTA, right, the Women's Tennis Association, they decided that as lucrative and as, you know, prosperous as business can be in China, and they had a couple of big events there that from which they withdrew, you know, tens of millions, you know, if not hundreds of millions of dollars over the last handful of years from, there is a downside to dealing with China. And they just decided, hey, the downside's not worth it for us. We're not playing ball with the Chinese authorities if they're going to act the way they're acting in these situations. So, you know, I think everybody wants the bonanza that is expanding into the Chinese market. I think we're realizing that there comes with that, you know, with that potential windfall comes a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
And it might be the kind of baggage that you don't want to take on at this point in time, given all the other complications around COVID.
We got some reports coming out of practice. We'll tell you about those when we return. I'm Mike DiStefano. He's Dave Festchuk. Let's head out west with Sarah Orleski. Also, when we get back here, you're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. Leafs Lunch is brought to you by Vanilla Visa Prepaid Card, available at Petro-Canada, the perfect gift for any occasion. And coming to the lunch table to join myself, Al's brother, along with Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star, is TSN Jets reporter Sarah Orleski. Sarah, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Leafs in Winnipeg on Sunday. Two teams kind of heading in different directions right now. You get the Leafs, winners of 15, their last 17. Jets, a 1-5-1 record in their last seven games, outscored 20-9 in that stretch. What's gone wrong for the Jets here lately?
Well, first, the last time I believe I was on Leafs Lunch might have been actually, Dave might have been a co-host on that day as well, discussing the Leafs possible parade route last season. So given their success right now, I am shocked that that is not how this was introduced, this segment. But certainly, I mean, you can't argue with what the Leafs have been doing throughout this regular season so far up to this point. And yet the Jets have certainly struggled. The shots have been there. Obviously, the finish hasn't been. And so one of the biggest issues that they've had with their scoring woes being the special teams and their power play, which has just been ice cold over this stretch, and their shooting percentage is low. But the shots are there. They aren't getting to the net, and certainly this is not something I think a lot of people anticipated. The fact that they're going to go through a stretch of struggles. Okay, fine, you expect it in a season, but I don't think that given the way that they started, anybody would have expected that the scoring woes would be to the degree that they are right now.
And I mean, obviously it's a good time in Winnipeg in some ways, Sarah, because he got the Blue Bombers in the Western Final this weekend. But when the Winnipeg Jets are tail spinning the way they're tail spinning, Sarah, like, what's the chatter around town? Like, who are the average Jets fans pointing their fingers at as the culprits here?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to, I mean, there's no doubt that, look, when you talk about fans, that there's a lot of frustration with this group. Of course, you always go, inevitably, in these situations, you hear a lot of question marks regarding the coach and some of the decisions there when it comes to line structure. And it's going, and then Blake Wheeler's one that has taken a bit of heat, whether that's fair or not, as he's come back from COVID. You haven't seen really nobody right now is saved from it, because for all of the good things that we saw early on with Kyle Connor and his production, Pierre-Luc Dubois, I mean, the way that he started this season and played the first half of these games up to this point, that's the Pierre-Luc Dubois that everybody had been waiting and hoping to see when he was acquired. And so for it to have gone cold now, I think everybody's feeling a little bit of the heat, and the pressure's certainly on. I said it was a good thing that they spent a number of these games on the road, because it wouldn't be, you know, you never want to play like that necessarily, or have that little production in front of your home fans.
Well, you know, the Jets are back home. They get the Devils tonight, with the Leafs Sunday and Canes on Tuesday. How optimistic are you that this group can kind of finish their homestand on a high note?
Well, I think so. I mean, look, the talent that they have, it's not as if this is a roster in which you look and go, oh, there's a lot of holes here, and that they don't have the skill there. They do. You look at who they have in their top six, and you look at the improvements that they've made on the blue line. But I also think that this is a group that right now has had their confidence shaken in terms of their struggles to score. But I think that when they turn it around and when the goals start, you know, they start getting a couple in, that we'll see this team kind of return to form a little bit more. They've made adjustments philosophically to their first power play unit. We're going to get a look at that tonight. We'll see whether or not that's able to have a little bit more production. They've changed the structure and the personnel on it. And I think, you know, if you can start to get at least one power play goal here to take some of the heat off of the five on five and maybe get a little bit more momentum going. Like I said, the shots have been there. The high volume against Arizona, which they lost 1-0, they outshot them 45-15.
And wow.
But so, I mean, they're shooting more than what we've seen in the past, because that's not something that they necessarily excelled at. And there's a lot of elements of their games, their exits, their entries, that they're doing the best that we've seen them do in a number of years, but they haven't been able to finish. Even though they're getting the shots, the traffic in front of the net hasn't been there. That's something they're looking to change. And I think that, again, once you get one or two of those goals going in on it and the confidence starts going, this team's too talented for it to stay like this for much longer, I would think.
Yeah, you'd have to think. I mean, hey, the Leafs went through a stretch too, Sarah, where, you know, they were just not scoring, and a lot of it was just the simple math of puck luck and the law of averages, you know, rebounding eventually. But let's talk about the Blake Wheeler situation. I mean, this is a guy still without a goal, guy who had 15 goals in 50 games last year, was among their best producers. What's your theory on what's holding him back this year? Is it the aforementioned bad puck luck? Is it a guy who at age 35 is just falling off a cliff a little bit as a producer?
See, and I find it difficult to believe that he's fallen off to that extent from what. And I know that they say that usually hands are the first to go, everything, but I just find it difficult to believe that the drop off is that drastic for it. But as you have to remember, I mean, he was one of two players on this team that's had COVID this year, and I think that, you know, I mean, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that the lingering effects of it. We've seen it with other players. Could that be something that's impacting him with this slow start? He's set to play his 1,000th game on Sunday when the Leafs are here, milestone, and he's been such an important part of this organization. And you know, for so many years, Paul Maurice, I mean, looked at him as being the driver of the group. That was always the way that he was described for it. So there's no doubt this isn't the Blake Wheeler used to seeing. You're not going to see, he's obviously in the, you know, later stages of his career, you're not going to see the same sort of production and level of play maybe that we saw several years ago. With that being said, I just don't believe with Wheeler being the type of player that he is, that we'd see this sort of drop-off. I think there has to be more to it, and maybe that's giving too much credit to it, but I think that, yeah, I think that maybe there's more that needs to be looked at. And we mentioned it was a slow start in terms of him having to be sidelined with COVID, and he had symptoms wasn't able to practice, wasn't able to skate, and I just think he hasn't found his game since then.
Sarah, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to your Jets tonight and your Bombers on Sunday. It'll be perfect. You'll have the Bombers game, and right after that, Jets and Leafs. Pretty good Sunday for you.
It's a fantastic Sunday in Winnipeg, and when you guys do plan out your parade route, please make sure to give me a call.
Always with the mocking, Sarah. We love it.
We will. I'll make sure it happens. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Okay, take care, guys.
Take care. Sarah Leske, TSN hockey reporter, Jets reporter, also Blue Bombers reporter. And Dave, I don't know if you saw that that update out of the Toronto Argonauts, but MBT, McLeod Bethel Thompson, might not be available this Sunday for the Argos. What a disaster. Oh, my gosh.
What a disaster.
For those who aren't aware, we're not going to spend too much time talking about this on Leafs Lunch, but McLeod Bethel Thompson, at the ask of the team, went to the Raptors game yesterday, and apparently that is not COVID protocol, and now he's going to have to quarantine for 4 days, and the game is 2 days away. So unless, you know, they can get around that, it doesn't look like they'll be with their starting quarterback. And keep in mind, they traded Nick Arbuckle midseason, the other starter that they had going into the year. Not a good spot for them.
It seems like the only way they're going to get around it is to ignore their protocols. So it's either you just laugh in the face of these rules you set out, or you sit the guy down and say, sorry, you can't play no matter how big the game is, no matter what the stakes are in the Eastern Final here for a chance to go to the Grey Cup. This is the debacle of debacles. And the idea that he violated the protocols attempting to help promote the team by going to a Raptors game is the irony of ironies.
It's just incredible. I think Mike Pinball Clemens will be on Overdrive later today at 6:30, so I'm sure he'll be talking about that among other things today. So mark that down, 6:30, Mike Pinball Clemens on Overdrive. We teed it up before we went to break, some updates from Leafs practice. Looks like Morgan Rielly not practicing today, according to the scribes down there at practice. Sandin in his place up on the top pair with and on PP1 as well, Muzzin on PP2. Do you make anything of this, Dave, or any worries here? Maintenance day? What's up here, you think?
Certainly didn't see any indication Morgan Rielly was on the limp out west. So my guess here, my gut, I don't know. We'll have to find out when we hear Sheldon Keefe address the media after practice. But this sounds like a maintenance day for a veteran player, run-of-the-mill maintenance day. But who knows? I mean, you don't know. But more concerning, speaking of Jake Muzzin on the second power play, sounds like Jake Muzzin has run into Mitch Marner at practice, and Marner has since left the ice after, according to my colleague Kevin McGrann from the Toronto Star, after that both had words about the hit that Muzzin laid on Marner. Marner is no longer practicing, has left the ice. So that's not a great development if you're a Leaf fan.
No, that is definitely not a good development. We'll keep an eye on both of those things. Someone who is back on the ice today, though, Andre Kasha, full practice on his regular line with Engvall and Kampf. Mikheyev also gets in a full practice. He's wearing a gray extra. So I want to speculate here, but hopefully everything's okay with Marner. But at least they are starting to get some bodies back. But geez, not a positive day for Toronto sports fans.
Yeah, well, Mark Masters has the video of Mitch Marner chewing out Jake Muzzin after this hit. We haven't seen the hit. I'm not sure if there's video of the hit, but apparently it was during a drill. They collided, and then Marner was really laying into Jake Muzzin after the hit and then left the ice. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. You don't see that very often in a practice. I've been down at Leaf practice many times over the years, and I can't, you can count on one hand the number of times you see teammates really getting after each other.
Well, often it's when things aren't going well, and that's not the case here with the Maple Leafs, right? Like, often things aren't going well, and you know, someone goes a little hard at practice, and someone's not in a good mood, and you see fights break out or skirmishes break out. But I mean, things are rolling, things are going well right now in Maple Leafs land. 15 their last 17 wins, so it's not something you typically see when things are going so hot right now.
Yeah, well, there was that. Remember, there was the Phil Kessel David Booth fight. I remember that one. I think it was like back in 2015 when things weren't exactly you know, rosy around the club. Well, who knows what that was all about? But I mean, this doesn't happen, especially with this team, a team that's, you know, not known for laying physical beatings on anyone.
Yeah,
I mean, Jake Muzzin probably is the most physical guy out there on any given day, and you know, has that as a cornerstone of his game. But, you know, how many times have you seen Marner actually get hit anytime, practice, game, anywhere?
It's pretty elusive. Like, he
doesn't get hit.
Yeah, he's very elusive. He knows exactly where he is out on the ice, so it's surprising. One last thing that I want to get your thoughts on here. Did you see the Stadium Series jerseys that got released for Nashville and Tampa last night?
Yes, my eyes are still hurting, Al's brother.
Okay, I don't like the Bolts one. To me, is way worse. The Smashville Nashville jerseys. If you guys haven't seen them, the Bolts one is like, it's just a white jersey and it's got a lightning bolt, I guess, and it's white and with blue on it. It says Bolts across the jersey. I think it looks lazy and dumb. The Smashville one, it's starting to grow on me. When I first saw it yesterday, I was like, this kind of looks silly. It looks almost like a rugby shirt. Yes. But it's starting to kind of grow on me. I'm not going to lie.
It's not growing on me. It's a rugby shirt because you're right. It's got the horizontal striping a la a rugby shirt.
Yeah.
But to me, it looks like a crappy version of the Swedish national team jersey because it's got this sort of little three-star logo, which is, to my knowledge, has never been associated with the Nashville Predators.
I think it's a guitar pick. Like, it's just a guitar pick. I don't know what the three...
Okay, maybe it's a guitar pick.
Well, I don't know what the three stars are, but it's like, I believe that is a guitar pick in the center.
Well, as somebody who likes to strum a guitar now and then, I can relate to that. It's Guitar Town. It's Music City. We get that. But the three stars kind of look like the Trey Kroners. So, and then, the color scheme. The color scheme's okay. It's just... Yeah, the striping's too big. It's an eyesore to me. I'm not a big fan of a lot of these things. So the Bolts one, I think we've seen the essentially that Bolts design before. Doesn't seem like a new design out of Tampa Bay to my eye. What do you say, Al?
No, it's pretty much the same. Just the way the Bolts is like diagonally across the body. I think it's just the fact that I don't know the writing is just a little bit different. Like the lettering has some. I don't know, some other colors kind of coming off of it, as if maybe it's got electrocuted, like it's like lightning, like I don't know.
Right.
I don't like the Tampa ones. The Nashville ones, somewhat growing on me, but a lot of these third jerseys that have been coming out lately, poor design, man. Like poor design. I have not been a fan.
I think if you're an aspiring jersey designer, there's a career for you, because the people that are doing it right now are really botching it up.
Yeah, totally agree. The Leafs Lunch Table is fueled by Vanilla Prepaid Cards and Petro-Canada. For your chance to win a $100 Vanilla Visa prepaid card, text the keyword lunch and your name to 105050 right now. The keyword lunch and your name to 105050 right now. Standard text message rates apply. I'm Mike DeStefano with Dave Festchuk. Dave, does Austin Matthews and John Tavares sit amongst the league's best 1-2 punches down the middle? Hold your answer. We'll find out after the break. We're going to power rank our 1-2 punches, our center tandems around the league. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Six. TSN 1050. Listen anywhere. Listen to episodes of your favorite shows by getting the podcast. Find your favorite shows on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Matthews has done it again!
Now, back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Lighten up, it's Friday.
Friday.
Is it Friday already?
CGIF.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5!
It's Friday! You're listening to The Leafs Lunch, Friday, 5 in 5. On TSN 1050, the Leafs live here.
It's so easy to get out of your car lease at Canada's number one lease takeover marketplace, LeaseBusters. Avoid penalties and early termination. Go to LeaseBusters.com. Mike DeStefano, a.k.a. Al's brother, with you. Alongside me, I've got Toronto Stars Dave Festchuk. And Fest, we got our Friday 5 in 5, and we're doing a little bit of a ranking here. We're taking a look at the top 5 1-2 centers in the league. The 1-2 punch. You know, there's a lot of them is what I came to figure out as I was doing this exercise and trying to figure it out. So I'm curious to see what your list looked like. So I'm going to let you go first. List them off from 5 to 1.
All right, from 5 to 1, I'm going with my fifth selection. I'm going with the Carolina Hurricanes duo of Sebastian Aho and Vincent Trocheck. More so because Aho is so awesome, but Trocheck, obviously a solid choice down the middle. 4, I've got the Tampa Bay Lightning tandem of Braden Point, Steven Stamkos. 3, I am going MacKinnon Kadri from the Colorado Avalanche. 2, I've got Mr. Matthews and Mr. Tavares from the, of course, Toronto Maple Leafs. And 1, I'm not sure how you do not rank these guys 1 with the numbers they're putting up and the success they're having. Of course, the Edmonton duo of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl.
So we are very, very similar, and we disagree on just one of those top five duos. It's in a little bit of a different order here, but I had Point and Stamkos as my fifth one as well. Then Kadri and MacKinnon as my fourth. I put Crosby and Malkin, and I know it's somewhat of a cheat because Malkin hasn't played yet this season.
Yes.
But like when you take a look at these guys and just imagine health, they are most definitely a top three duo in the NHL. But what I think is more interesting is that I have Matthews Tavares as my 2 and McDavid Draisaitl also as my 1. And to me, the way that Matthews and Tavares are playing right now, I think that they may even have surpassed Crosby and Malkin when fully healthy.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt of that. Now, look, I didn't put Malkin and Crosby in my ranking because I got to see a guy play. I mean, especially a guy like Evgeny Malkin, who's 35 years old.
And, you haven't seen enough of Malkin to know? Come on.
Well, no, I'm just he hasn't stepped on the ice surface this year, Al's brother. That's my if you want to call that a technicality, I call that a fundamental. You have to be available to be on my list, and he's not currently available. Apparently, he is coming closer to nearing his season debut, according to reports out of Pittsburgh. But yeah, look, I don't think there's any doubt that the way Matthews and Tavares, and especially Tavares, we come to expect what we've come to expect from Austin Matthews, but I think, you know, John Tavares, you know, has had his ups and downs in the last, year or so with the Toronto Maple Leafs, not only, you know, being unavailable for playoff action after his first shift because of that horrific collision against Montreal, but you know, really just generally there's a lot of fundamental analysis of this team that says, you know, the day they signed John Tavares was the day that everything went wrong in terms of roster construction with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And until they have playoff success, I don't think that conversation is going to end. But, you know, that we know one thing about this team. They know how to win regular season games. And the way they're winning them right now, I don't think there's any doubt that Matthews Tavares has surpassed everybody in this league outside of the city of Edmonton.
Yeah, I totally concur with that. Like, the way that they're playing right now, and Tavares, I wonder if he's played his way onto Team Canada yet the way that he has this season. Do you think, like, if they end up going, is Tavares going to be on that flight to Beijing?
It's a great debate. I mean, you know, when you look at the way they've constructed teams in the past, I think the answer would be yes. But, you know, if they're looking more for a role player at the bottom of that forward lineup, if you're looking for just
I was asked yesterday on the show, so I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, Hyman or Tavares. And the way that we've heard Hockey Canada speak about the construction of this team is whether or not, you know, it's going to be an all-star team or a team they can feel can win. And Hyman brings a lot of different elements that maybe perhaps suggest that he could make this team over Tavares.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Zach Hyman brings one element that Tavares can't claim, which is all-out speed. Like, you know, Zach Hyman can really, really roll out there, as we all know. He can get in on the forecheck. He can muck in the corners. He can take hits and give them. And we know he can skate with the big boys. Like, we've seen the likes of Chris Kunitz get on a team because he's good at skating with Sidney Crosby. So it wouldn't shock me if that type of thing happened with this Team Canada construction.
Yeah, let's just hope that that we do see some NHL Olympic action. Dave, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for pinch hitting, and hopefully Julia will be back on Monday. But that can do it for us here today. If you missed any of today's show, you can find it on tsn1050.ca or ever get your podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano for Dave Festchuk. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch Gameplay with Gareth Wheeler. Next.